Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with the healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Welcome to this edition of Five Good Things, a podcast where we look at the good things happening in healthcare. I'm here with Megan Antonelli, the founder and CEO of Health Impact, and I'm Janae Sharp, the founder and CEO of Sharp Index and great friend of Health Impact.
Hi, Janae. How are you today?
I'm doing well. My kids are off today, so just expect someone to walk in at some point asking a completely inappropriate question that has nothing to do with digital health.
Well, I'll start to worry when they do ask about digital health.
Some of the topics today that we're going to be talking about are relevant to parents and to children. And there's something that I've heard from multiple moms. They ask me about it a lot every time I say that I'm involved in healthcare IT and in health tech. This is the top of mind. So be ready for that. And I'd love to ask you, what is your first thing? What's the first good thing we're going to be talking about?
Well, the first good thing is happening at a global level. The World Health Organization has started a global initiative on digital health called GUIDE, and they are looking for folks to join, members, companies, organizations, nonprofits, educational groups, and I think you can learn more about that, but it is meant to be sort of a collaborative, connecting all of the different groups across the globe, which is exciting to see. There's been a lot of international effort. You can see HIMSS kind of making they're making great strides in bringing that in. I heard recently that they have a new head of their board who is based in Europe. So important collaborative digital health efforts. And yes. So this could be a really interesting thing, obviously coming out of their work most recently. So you can learn more about how to become a member at WHO's website, which is WHO.int, and it's called the Global Initiative on Digital Health. So I'm excited about that. We certainly applied and encourage others to do that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that work. I think one of the things we learn as more people get involved, and as you learn more about digital health and about public health, is that digital health is world health, and there are such different needs. So this initiative talks about getting more people involved, but it's also about country needs tracking. Like, what do people need in a specific area? What are the resources that are available? What are the tools that people have to actually transform you so everyone has equal opportunity and equal access to live their healthiest lives? Mm-hmm. And how do you convene knowledge about this and exchange it? And I'm glad that initiative is started.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think we always think healthcare in certain countries being more advanced. However, we're also stuck in kind of the legacy of the systems that we have. And where you have places where they are just developing or growing now, sometimes those systems can in fact be more innovative as they're not grown or sort of constrained by the existing confines that we have in our healthcare system. So where often it's digital first because they haven't built hospitals. And there's a lot to be learned from those models and what can come from that, especially as we look to bring that sort of less hospital-centric model here.
Yes. What a great thing it would be to be able to have healthcare available where you need it, how you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
Okay. So
what's your first good thing? Yeah.
My first good thing is that the Lorna Breen Act is up for funding and up for reauthorization with Congress. So we really want people to get involved with that. And part of that, just to level set for the audience with some of the background, this is an initiative to increase knowledge and increase research about healthcare provider mental health. And it's just the start. And it was authorized, bipartisan bill, super popular, and also part of this increased awareness of what working in healthcare is like and the mental health crisis. Even the CDC and the Surgeon General have highlighted the need for people to recognize this and for us to have proactive solutions for it. Mm-hmm. So there are ways to get involved. You can email your legislators, you can contact people, and also start talking about that. Ask your healthcare provider. And I think it's also a great sign of the power that individuals have to influence healthcare for the better.
When they say reauthorizing the act or the bill, have they even shared if it's like the same financial commitment, increased financial commitment? Do they get into those kind of specifics when they talk about the reauthorization of the bill?
I think that lawmakers do have options to increase it. Obviously, it's only funded for a temporary part, for a short period of time. Wouldn't it be nice if they could fund it and expand it? Less than 1% of the hospitals in our country are receiving program funding from the current authorization and current funding. And the need is definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
it would be great
I think
to expand
so,
it.
Right.
Like
I mean,
you're
it created
asking,
awareness. Yeah. It put a name and a face to this problem coming out of the pandemic, which was particularly a heightened time, but certainly not the first and not new, but it has created a certain awareness and certainly made it part of the national discourse. But then it's only a drop in the bucket. It's only the beginning. How much more work is to be done? And I mean, so yes, obviously it is great news that they are planning to reauthorize it, and hopefully that happens.
Yes. And we can share that. There's a form, like it's really easy actually to reach out to people. But that was a great question. It's just the start. Like they've been able to help 1% of people, but more work is needed. It's like we have this awareness, and now is the time when we get down to the work and to funding that work to make sure that healthcare can be healthy. So that was my first thing, the Lorna Breen Healthcare Act reauthorization, that there are so many people who are supporting this and there are so many people getting involved. That would be my number one thing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Another thing at the government level, that sort of being more obviously at the federal level, at the city level, some interesting news coming out of New York.
There's always interesting news coming out of New York, right?
Well, that is true.
Just ask a New Yorker.
Relevant to healthcare. We never talk about New York.
New Yorkers never talk about themselves.
It's true. Eric Adams is suing, the New York City mayor is suing TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and YouTube for their role in the current youth mental health crisis.
Yes.
So we are taking the side that this is good news.
I think it's good news. Like this, I alluded to this, like the relevant news for young people. And there are several reasons I think it's good news. One, I think a lot of people are wondering what's going on with kids these days. And maybe that's not just like a boomer sentiment, like, hey, or what's up with these kids? There are actual higher rates of depression, higher rates of suicidal ideation, and like things are tough for kids right now. So as a parent, I think people are asking themselves, like, has it always been like this? So and more about the actual lawsuit, mm-hmm. and like what's going on with New York. So I'd love to know like what your opinions are.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's interesting. I think, I mean, I don't know. I can't purport to know too much about it other than it's happening. And I think
the mayor, your bestie.
No, Eric and I are not really on first name basis, but I think it's a topic I think about all the time, right? I mean, it's a topic we fight about in this household all the time. Social media is a tough one for all parents, I think, and really even adults, right? So I think what this does, and while I would never, when you get into the discussions of video games and music and television that we talked about years ago, being what influence do they have and what accountability do they have? I mean, we just had recently the parent of a child who was involved in a mass shooting be found guilty, right? And I also think that is a good thing. And I think that there are very accountability in all of this is important, and making these organizations that have created and researched algorithms to make these apps stickier have a certain amount of accountability. Now, is depression going to go away if these if they take accountability? No. How much will change? Not
well, who knows? Maybe they could impact it.
But there are right. And the thing is that nobody knows. And so they have to take some accountability in it. And it whether it's the youth mental health crisis or the influence it has, the social media has on the political landscape, they have to take accountability. And there was also a recent, I think just yesterday, where all the media companies came out and aligned around saying that they would be doing everything that they can to ensure, particularly with respect to AI, that they would attempt to control and that there would be no negative impact. And when they found that, they would do something about it. So that's that there's self-regulation happening with this. This is a more specific case, but it'll be interesting to see. But at the end of the day, it's a good thing to me because it puts a focus on it.
And there are many roads to doing the right thing. They found I talked to Lucia Savage about this before, about how the privacy laws and the things that would protect your healthcare data within your healthcare organization are different than the privacy laws, even about healthcare data for social media companies. So they might know that you have a specific disease, or they might know these things based on a group you're in on Facebook, but they are not legally required by a policy standpoint to help make the right decisions or to keep that private even. And we've seen lots of lawsuits about that. I think this also expands that conversation to say, what are the responsibilities about companies with huge footprints and huge impact? Do they have responsibilities to do the right thing? And what sort of policy, legal, and community-based levers are we going to be using to influence that behavior to make sure that the people who are most important are protected? So I think it's also important from a policy perspective, just thinking, are people going to do the right thing? Are we able to tell if that's one of the things really impacting mental health? And how are we going to move that forward? And it's great to see when organizations are actively searching for that, especially with expansion of TikTok's giant, like expansion of artificial intelligence efforts. Seeing that makes you feel better in some ways about the number of people who are going to fight for and plan for the right thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I was just having a conversation with a friend about this. I mean, when we were kids, we didn't have social, we didn't have this constant sort of entertainment, even television. I had to walk uphill.
Yeah. When our parents told us to read a book, we had to go to the library and check that book out.
I had to get up and change the channel. I mean, come on. And so.
So rude. You had to rewind things in a machine.
Right. Oh, I mean, rewind. I mean, my kid doesn't know how to rewind. So
yeah, they don't even know what it is.
He doesn't know what that means. We had to wait for things to rewind before we returned the video to the store.
I liked Blockbuster. They had good snacks.
So I could reminisce on this all day. I mean, but then we were bored. And that boredom and that idle time, while maybe good for mental health, can sometimes lead to other behaviors. And in my case, it did.
And we don't know. I mean, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm going to hard pass on that topic. As someone who didn't really do anything, kids get into trouble online. Kids get into trouble offline.
Right.
I think a lot of people, I think I speak for a lot of people when they say, I'm glad it wasn't online.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I had a wall of bangs that I just wasn't recorded.
While I want to see accountability and the right things done by these companies that are involved, I also think that parents, if kids go out alone into the world, there are dangers. And if they go out alone into social media, they are also at risk. And so Well, I think the case is a good one for the attention, for the dialogue and discourse it will create. I think the blame is, it's not about a blame game. It's about how do we help these children navigate social media, because it's not going to go away. No matter how much we sue, they'll still have enough money to survive. So it's how do these companies take accountability for the guardrails and the education that's required?
Right. And how do we build a system together? I also think it is noteworthy to say that sometimes these communities have the power to connect you with ideas, with individuals, to create safe spaces and to create spaces that are healthier. You might be able to find your best friends online. And yeah, that potential for good is something I've always been enthusiastic about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get help with things online that you might not be able to get in person. So it would be wonderful to see an expansion of availability of mental health support, or see some of those people, Nintendo, if you're listening, see some of those great creators and great forces for good create communities and create specific algorithms and specific products that promote connection, promote a healthier relationship
mm-hmm.
with your social media, that create a better world.
Right.
So,
well, and that's, I mean, I think in terms of even if you look at healthcare, in terms of patients and the patient communities that exist, that there's a lot of those social communities that are positive. And there are social communities for children and teens that are positive, where they can find friends and people like them that they may not be finding within their schools or communities. So I do think it's important to talk about both sides. And I think that passing the blame or putting the blame someplace isn't fair. And I have lots of friends that don't allow their kids to use social media. And I wish I didn't sometimes. But I also think that if you allow them to just, if you wait until they are independent of you, then just like years ago when people never had exposure and then they went to college and then they go crazy, the same thing can happen. So it's about the guardrails. That is hard, but it's about control, being able to control the use. And then for the companies to be sure that they're keeping in some level of, that's where I was watching like the Social Dilemma, when they've put in these algorithms to make it so addictive, that's mm-hmm. where the crime to me, that's where the guilt does. And that yeah. those algorithms that make them so sticky, that we have to work on that, that's not fair, that the kids and the parents can't even fight against that. But right. I mean, this is not a good thing. This is actually tragic. But this weekend also, it was in the news that Susan Wojcicki's son, who is a freshman at Berkeley, died, they think, of a potential drug overdose. And his mother, his grandmother, who I had met once years ago, posted on Facebook and talking about it. And Susan, of course, was the president of YouTube for a number of years and just stepped down recently. But, you know, what you hear about in social, in these circles, and certainly Esther, her mother, talks often about the dangers of social media. She was a teacher herself, so the education that's required, and she does a lot about parenting, and you can do so much, and then there's very little that can be controlled. But ultimately, most of these executives at these companies don't allow their kids to use social media, and they're very public about it, and they talk about that often. And so I have no insight into any of this, and it's all brand new, but I just hope that positive things can come of it to help kids in their ability to scale back their consumption, right? And right. scale back the influence of it, because they can understand that it's not, that it's imaginary, just like Disney.
Right. Right. And it's important to protect children and to make sure that we're working for improved outcomes, less bullying, less stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's also so top of mind. Like, every mom that I talk to wants to know, like, is it social media? Is that why kids are struggling? I've been asked by reporters as well, like, why are kids struggling? Is it because of these apps? I usually say maybe or no, because you can be a terrible parent and have kids online a lot, or it's hard. There are a lot of things that are working against kids these days. So it's nice to see people protecting them.
Yeah. Well, I saw a meme recently that you might have shared. Am I depressed, or have I just not been outside, not eaten healthy food, not exercised, not so there's a lot of
It's a real mystery.
There's a lot of factors at play.
It's a case for the FBI. Who knows why kids are struggling
in children's mental health? Yeah, but
that's what my kids say. They're like, "But have you seen things?" They're like, "I'm a little confused. Why are you confused?" And it's nice to see that not everybody is confused. All right, moving on to the next thing.
Well, and this is another confusing thing, though. Okay, because
only good.
Well, it is good. It's for sure good. A study from Allied Analytics came out. They said the global market in digital health has gone to 145.9, so basically 146 billion. Mm-hmm. That was hit in 2020, and they're expecting it to go to almost 770 billion in 2030, which is a good thing for digital health for sure. It's a good thing for healthcare in that there's a lot of smart people working to improve this, right? And on the flip side of that, also seeing some other financial news, I read about Kaiser reporting big gains, like $4 billion in terms of their growth and investments. So while groceries are very expensive and a lot of storefronts are closing, so the economy feels a little odd.
There's weird inflation things that are impacting more people than ever, where they have to make real decisions. Yeah. About what they purchase. And it's like not super fun.
No, but for sure not.
It's nice to hear news where it's like, hey, even though right now you can't necessarily buy the crackers you like or whatever, things aren't going to get better. Things are projected to go well. And we kind of need that. Like we need a little bit of financial good news. Like when all these giants were just losing money hand over fist and like, we were like, what? It's nice to see that Kaiser is making a profit with investments, that there are smart people working on this who can get things better. I also think that news about the expanding digital health market is great news. Like when we look at accessibility to care and rural health, different places where people are willing to engage in healthcare in their communities, that potential that digital health has to provide better care suited to people's needs where they live is huge. And we long term will be building a healthier society.
Yeah, and a lot of the big investments and growth in companies are coming from these highly specialized care providers that are looking at niche populations, rural health, women's health, and really
women's health is a niche population. I knew it.
Okay, maybe not, but specific.
Yeah.
And that I think is, it's an interesting market to see. And I think it'll be fun to watch it all shake out over the years. I think that we're only seeing the beginning of it now. I kind of feel like they're all very innovative. And then eventually they're all going to have to come together at some point. You don't want to have that many medical homes, but
all the apps all day.
All the apps all day. Yeah. I think it's always good news when you see money flowing into the market on that front. So
yes. Let's talk about my last good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the publication. Speaking of things coming together and things being created, let's talk about patients being involved in creation and patient needs being met. Because Susanna Fox has released her book, Rebel Health. And it talks a lot about the next wave of health innovation. And how patients can be included and different archetypes about the type of people who are going to be involved in that, the seekers, the networkers, the solvers, and the champions. And I like Susanna Fox.
I do too. She's really a light in terms of her voice on social for the most part, which is where I see her and get to engage with her the most. So, but I'm excited. I'm hoping she'll be on a book tour. Hopefully, maybe we'll be able to get her on the show.
So she's the next person we're going to promote her book and interview her. And really, I'm glad that there are leaders who are talking about that connection among patients, survivors, and caregivers that are also addressing some of those questions like the archetypes. Because sometimes when you hear conversations about that, you're not going to resonate with every single one. Like the conversation that you want control of your data. And I'm like, I don't resonate with that. I want it to just magically appear. Like, I don't want to have to bring my shot record with me. That sounds awful. Like there are different people who need different stuff.
She came at it, I think, well, she was the CTO at HHS. And then I should research this a little better before we brought it up. But I think if my memory serves, she took time off to care for a parent, I think that, or she was a caregiver in some way. And I think that going from, as we hear with so many of our colleagues and contacts that we work with, but when you work in healthcare and you go from patient, go to become a patient, or you become a caregiver, your insights they change, right? And you see this a side of healthcare where you realize while you've been working on it in the theoretical for so many years, that when you're in the reality of it, it's very different. And so I think that's what she's bringing to this story. And certainly her perspective, I imagine, as a bit of a rebel in that. So I can't wait to read it. Is it out yet or coming out?
It's out. It came out the 13th of February. So you can order that book and we'll include a link for people.
How did we not get it for each other for Valentine's Day?
I don't know. Probably because I was not feeling. We'll have to reschedule. So we're rescheduling Valentine's Day. That's the other good thing. We're going to send out a couple books.
And the other good thing is that Janae is not sick anymore.
No,
well,
that's
only
nice.
Just a little.
Only just a little bit of a cold. It's fine. Mm-hmm. We're over COVID from this round. And we're ready to go see everyone.
Can't wait.
I'm ready to read the book for that good thing. And those are five good things. There are lots of other good things that are happening in healthcare. We hope that everyone shares their good things with us so that we can cover it, so we can talk about it, so that we can have real conversations about the things that impact health and impact digital health.
Awesome. Thanks, Janae. Thanks, everybody. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Health Impacts Digital Health Talk. Don't miss another podcast. Subscribe at digitalhealthtalks.com. And to join us at our next face-to-face event, visit healthimpactlive.com.